This is Women Who Lead on 760 WJR with Ann Thomas and Luann Thomas-Ewald. Sponsored by the University of Michigan Health Von Voigtlander Women's Hospital.
Welcome into Women Who Lead. I'm Ann Thomas, and my co-host is Luann Thomas-Ewald. She's the Chief Operating Officer of C.S. Mott Children's Hospital and the Von Voigtlander Women's Hospital. On today's show, you'll meet Karen Arendosky. She's the President and owner of IF Metalworks, and she's one of WJR's 2025 Women Who Lead honorees. And there was a huge verdict involving a sexual harassment case in Oakland County Circuit Court last month. We'll talk to Todd Flood, who will have all the details for us. And finally, the governor has signed important legislation involving Michigan's minimum wage laws. Wendy Block from the Michigan Chamber will stop by to explain how this will affect restaurant workers around the state. A great show with interesting guests coming up right after these messages. Welcome into Women Who Lead. I'm Ann Thomas, and our first guest today is Karen Arendosky. She's the president and owner of IF Metalworks in Macomb County, and Karen is one of our 2025 Women Who Lead honorees. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It is such a pleasure to be here.
And congratulations on this honor. Our good friend Jennifer Mefford nominated you, and this is very well deserved.
Thank you very much. I am excited and humbled to accept the to be an honoree. It is such a pleasure.
So tell our listeners about this business, Karen, IF Metalworks.
So it started in 2002, and it started off basically as a welding and fabrication, and I decided that I wanted to make it more of an all-in-one through the years. So this is our 23rd year. We opened in April of 2002. And the main thing I wanted was to be able to give back to the community. I consider my employees family. We started off with three of us, and we now have 35 and still need to hire more. And we now basically have just about everything we need in-house, including a powder coat line.
What kind of work do you do? Tell us a little bit about some of the projects that you've been involved in.
Our major project that took 4 years was Michigan Central Station, and that was probably one of my favorites. We did over 130 flights of stairs and railings, aged bronze elevator door skins and surrounds in the main lobby, all decorative mechanical grills, 2,000 square feet, exterior canopy decorative cladding, and the ticket window grills, which is probably my favorite because it has a personal memory for me. My mother said she used to get her tickets at the ticket window all the time.
Okay.
So it brings a special memory for me. And we're also doing a special project. It's called Hannah's Garden. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. It's from the Oxford shooting. So we're donating a lot of our time to that. And that is another favorite project. It's going to be beautiful when it's done.
Tell us a little bit more about Hannah's Garden. It sounds wonderful. What a nice thing to do.
It is going to be this huge tree made of metal, and they'll be putting everyone's names that, you know, were in the, that were involved in the shooting on the tree. And it's going to have a running water going through it, like a little river going through it. It's just beautiful. I mean, I'm excited for everybody to see it when it's complete.
So in 2024, your company was named the Macomb County Manufacturer of the Year. Explain to us a little bit more, Karen, about what goes into a company like this.
So we hire, we have a welders and fabricators, and we also have CAD designers. We started off, like I said, with welding and fab, and then after COVID hit, a lot of things changed. A lot of people did not have their CAD people anymore. So where we used to do a little bit of CAD, we now had to have a CAD team. So we're still growing that as well. And then our install people, we've installed at Little Caesars and all around Michigan. And so we needed more install people. So we grew the install from 3 people to now we have 12 people. Both of those were hit very hard after COVID that we needed to grow that. We do a lot of decorative metals. One of the things that we are currently working on now that we've finished Michigan Central overall, we are now also doing work at the Henry Ford Estate out in Dearborn. And we've done a lot of work, I mentioned to you, at the Eleanor and Edsel Ford Convention Center as well. And so we do a lot of decorative. We're sometimes the last people to come in. There's another project that we're just completing out in Birmingham at the corner of Adam and Haynes, 5-story condominiums. And we're doing all of the balconies, the railings, even the signage. That became a new project that we do. We purchased a printer that does ADA as well, and that was a requirement for this job. So we are doing all of the signage for that job as well.
So interesting. I mean, Karen, you're the president and owner of IF Metalworks. Give us the backstory. Have you always been interested in metal, in manufacturing? Wow.
So it started off as a project for one of the big three, as we call it.
Okay.
And we built it in a barn. And it was, we had to have 6 prototypes. They accepted it, and then I needed a building. So Jeff is the vice president, and we started it together. And we have been on, one of the things that I wanted to do was make sure that we did not only do automotive, that we were very diverse. So I wanted to make sure, so we started off doing restaurant-type work and getting more into the decorative metals, and a lot of architects contact us for their jobs for us to quote their work. I like pretty. They tease me that I like to see things pretty. Even the automotive things that we did, watching people building all of these parts on a table was very exciting for me to see that. My background actually has been in the medical field for 25 years prior to that, and I also worked for school districts and Mark in the advertising and public relations department. And then this just came up all by accident, and I was like, okay, can I do this? And 23 years later, we have grown every year. We've been extremely successful, continue to grow our clientele, and we have great clients.
Oh, it's fascinating the way your career path has turned out. When you were a young girl, did you ever envision yourself doing something like this?
No, not at all. I think the thing that probably is the most important about me is that I like to give back to the community. I sit on several boards, the Macomb County St. Clair Workforce Development. I also sit on the AIM. It's the Aerospace Industry Association of Michigan. I sit on their foundation board, and I also sit on their Women of AIM, their committees. We have, you know, budget committee and a events committee. And part of the Women of AIM is to help young women of today down to the 4th grade. We even do a space challenge. It's called the Michigan Space Challenge, to get 4th graders interested and to let them learn about it. So they do everything. We mentor them. They have to come up with a problem in space, and how do you fix it? You have to do a drawing and correct, you know, to how you're going to correct the problem. They have to have a business plan. So we work with them and teaching them at a young age. And we've had over 119 girls join up for this. This will be our 4th year coming up. And it's exciting to see that. So I'm also the past president of Cruz and Gratiot in East Point. And it was about giving back to other organizations, nonprofits that have issues trying to, you know, get funding. So my kids were raised that way. They were involved with it. And my son works for me, and my son-in-law works for me, my niece and my nephew. It's kind of a family, but everyone here to me is family. I want to see them do better for themselves. So that's my whole goal in my company, is to make sure that we are able to hire people and give them good jobs, good health benefits, and be able to raise a family.
You know, it's interesting hearing you talk, Karen, because two big things come out. Number one, you have a big heart for the community. And number two, you really care about mentoring and bringing young people into different careers that they might be interested in. Talk to us about that. How do you mentor young people who may come to you and say, hey, I don't know what I want to do. Can you help me out?
Yes, the Edward Lowe Foundation, I'm not sure if you've ever heard of them, but I have received several awards, and one of them was Top 50 Companies in Michigan to Watch back in 2009, and that started me on the road with the Edward Lowe Foundation, and part of that is always giving back. One day I hope that I can give back to the Ed Lowe Foundation that will continue to give to entrepreneurs, and if you can see the work that these children did at the for the Space Challenge, it's been unbelievable. I mean, it's hard to believe that some of these are fourth graders. And I like to make sure that people are able to feel like they're of worth, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I want to make sure that, you know, when I see my guys in the back working, and women. We have a female welder now, and she does great. But if you see them working and you see them taking pride in their work, then it makes you feel good. It makes you say, I have that aha moment of making sure that something happens. So the Ed Lowe Foundation also helps you to grow that, to see those different avenues that you want to see happen. I want to give back all the time. You know, I did this because I wanted to see people have a job to go to every day and not worry about getting laid off. And I work very hard to make sure that we're constantly reaching out to new customer base and good customer base. And we are very fortunate. We've taken this company from starting off in automotive to automotive, industrial, decorative metals, aerospace and defense. And I have a great customer base with that. I'm very fortunate.
Karen, you mentioned having a female welder. Are you starting to see more women getting into the metalworking business?
I am, and I'm glad to see. She was laid off from her previous job and was hoping to get hired back, but she said they weren't hiring people back. And so I saw her weld, and I said to my guy, I said, so? He said, yes, we're going to definitely hire her. And so I'd like to see more because they do, I mean, she does beautiful work. I mean, I've seen her work time and time again. I go out there in the back of my shop. I'm very involved. I'm not somebody that just sits in the office. I am very involved in going out there and seeing how things are going and how's the employee, how are they doing and are they happy? Because that's important to me. I want them to have a good place to go to work.
Well, I can certainly see why you have been nominated to be one of our 2025 Women Who Lead honorees. Karen Arendosky, she is the president and owner of IF Metalworks in Macomb County. Thank you so much for your time today. It was really nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Same here. I really enjoyed this interview. Thank you so much.
Coming up next on Women Who Lead, the inside scoop on a huge verdict against Science Beauty Tech.
Women Who Lead on WJR, sponsored by the University of Michigan Health Von Voigtlander Women's Hospital.
I'm Ann Thomas, and we now say hello to Todd Flood. Todd is the founder of Flood Law. Todd, welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us today. You're here today to talk about this $106 million verdict against Science Beauty Tech and the company's owner. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
So what happened here? Kind of start from the very beginning, Todd.
Well, this defendant was, as I called in opening statements, was a very disturbing man. He had a company. He retired from that company, made his money, opened up this Science Beauty Tech, which was supposed to sell body suits, fitness equipment, and exercise equipment. And what he would do is, this was sort of a shell. It really wasn't a company for the purposes of going forward and making lots of money and being profitable. He primarily was doing this to hire young women that came out of college, graduated with a degree, or to the extent that you were just out of high school and wanted to earn money as a model, modeling this equipment. And ultimately what he did was he would groom these women, these young women, who came with their eyes wide open, wanting to start in the business world and enter a career of sales and selling health equipment. And really the ruse was to be a predator. And the things he did were just very disturbing, from touching to massaging to rubbing their hands on their bottom to all sorts of things, even to the extent of one young lady, he took on a trip and attempted to assault. He did, under the statute, criminal sexual conduct in the fourth degree, he did. So he did this on multiple occasions with multiple women, and there's going to be more that come out of the woodworks, but it's just a sad tale. I think it's pervasive in the world, but this one was truly very disturbing.
It had to have been very disturbing for the jury to give this kind of money. I mean, that jury had to have been extremely annoyed, Todd.
The jury, in every case, there's a villain you try to portray, if you're in the plaintiff's side of the world. And this man was definitely, to the jury, he was portrayed as a villain. And there was, without question, a visceral reaction by the jury. He took the stand, and, needless to say, he was beat up pretty badly and did not have good coaching or didn't have great reactions. And I think the jury caught on to it, that we were speaking the truth. And they wanted to send a message to the extent that they could. And they wanted to try to bring some mercy to these women. I always say that, justice, if we could turn back the hands of time, so we might be able to get justice. And this was just a modicum of mercy. Money is not going to make them whole again. They still have to have treatment. Our brains are not digestive systems. It's in our stomach. So brains, we remember all of these things that happen to us, especially in our youth, and we carry it on. So here, the every single one of these young ladies and the ones that are coming forward are either in treatment or just starting treatment.
So it really impacted them, the way he treated them, Todd?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, to the extent where some were self-injurious, some live now back at home with their parents. It was a very, very serious, traumatic event to many of them.
How did the case start? Did one woman come forward and then the others followed? Can you kind of describe how this all started out?
Sure. So there was one young lady that started this whole thing, and she was basically repulsed. But this guy, Gary, he threatened her, if you do come forward, if you do say something, he talked about being in the Russian mob. This is an old school Russian gentleman. So anyway, if you want to use that term loosely. But anyway, she came forward with her husband, and I spoke with them, and she said, there are so many women here, so many young women here. We need to get all of them to step forward. And not all of them did. Not all of them could. There's many more. Mm-hmm. But there was some, strength in numbers, and one, Jane Doe, ended up getting five more. And I can tell you, and that was a difficult task because they were all frightened by this guy.
So it sounds like they were really intimidated by him.
Yeah. There was this testimony came out at the trial where he had a connection to a gentleman that was looked like out of central casting for a hitman. And, you know, they smoked cigars together and there was some overt talk. So the young women were afraid and didn't know who this man's connections were, based on that interaction with the guy that came out of central casting in the store at Science Beauty Tech in Birmingham, where they were at, and that kind of set kind of a tone of don't mess with me to these young ladies. You got to remember, these are 19 to 22-year-olds, right?
Right.
23 at the oldest. And they don't know any better. And then you got to remember, not all of them are talking to their parents because they're proud that they got their first job. They're going to get $60,000 to $70,000 a year, and they're going to be doing this stuff, and they have their heads held up high only to be, deflated by all of this. And that it was embarrassing for them to go to their parents, to talk to their, loved ones, because they didn't want to be, basically embarrassed by all of this. So it took a lot of courage. It took a lot of courage. And I give so much to young women. And in the sick part about this trial, Anne, is that the defense in this case made it clear to me anyway. I don't know if it was clear to the jury, but this was exactly why a lot of women don't come forward.
Right.
Was because they were trying to victim blame or victim shame. And that's what this guy did, too. So it did take a lot of courage, and the fact of the matter is that I think ultimately, hopefully, this can send a message for other young ladies that have to go through any of this, can step forward and to reach out to their loved ones, because that's really important in this case.
You know, Todd, call me naive, but I find this case to be jaw-dropping, that somebody would think that they could do that to women in 2025. Seriously.
Yeah. I think that's, you want to say this is an anomaly, right? And I can tell you right now, I have signed up in the past 6 months cases that are jaw-dropping.
Wow.
If, to the extent that, and I'm talking national companies that have big HR departments where women, and gentlemen, but I don't have any men, but I've heard the cases. But I have two cases coming forward that, were sexual innuendos, improper touching, improper text messages have come out. And those things do happen. I think it's more rare nowadays in 2025 than it was back, in the 80s and 90s, but it still does happen. And hopefully slower and more, less to the extent where it's extinct. Mm-hmm. But that's the hope anyway, so that it doesn't happen. There's no place for it, especially in this time where we have so much to accomplish with so many things. I mean, this world is kind of a crazy world right now, but we have to have good companies, great organizations, a lot of teamwork, and, you got to remember Ruth Bader, right? So women are strength in the workforce every day of the week, twice on Sunday.
Well, based on your experience, Todd Flood, what kind of advice do you have for women that are maybe entering the workplace or in the workplace? Are there warning signs for stuff like this?
Yeah. So there's two parts to that question. So first and foremost, you have a handbook. And in that handbook, even if it's a two-man shop or a three-man shop or a 10,000-person shop, if you have three people in the shop, there's still an employee handbook. And there's going to be a page, a section of what is not acceptable with sexual harassment, quid pro quo, what to do, how to react. Make sure you go through that. And if it's not there, You know, that's a conversation, that's a red flag to be had, right?
Right.
But in every major corporation, there's going to be a page. The company you work with, the company I work for, Flood Law, we have a definite, timeline of what to do, how to do it, who to respond to, what HR person to go through. I recommend, so that's first and foremost, make sure you understand that. I also recommend, if you're getting the weird, vibe, make sure you start documenting and do it, simultaneous to the act or after the act,
yes.
just after. Make sure you document what's said, how it's said. There shouldn't be a gotcha game. There shouldn't be, I've had totally different stories, but you need to make sure that you document how this has transpired. In the current case that I have right now that's coming up, the person wrote a diary basically of how she couldn't afford to lose her job. She couldn't afford to go out and work in the workplace somewhere else because she wasn't going to get hired. She put together basically a diary of timeline of how she was treated and for this major company. And the fact of the matter is that timeline is what is going to, I think, salvage the fact that she's speaking the truth, and it corroborates exactly how things took place. And hopefully we can get her some mercy as well. But in 2025, I hope to answer your question that we don't have to do all of these things, but the advice I have is to make sure you document.
And I would say if you're in management, if somebody comes to you, take it very seriously.
Amen to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
That's so true. That's so true. I have problems with HR departments because HR departments oftentimes are just they're the employer's HR department. That we think HR, when we hear about that human resources, we think that's the employee's human resources. That's the way it's supposed to be, but you got to remember HR has been hired by the company. And oftentimes, if not most of the time, to protect the company and not necessarily the employee. So managers, to your advice, Ann, take everything very seriously.
Todd Flood, thank you so much for your time today. And also thank you for the great advice. It was nice talking to you.
The pleasure was mine, Ann. Be well.
You are listening to Women Who Lead. Coming up next, Lansing lawmakers have compromised on important legislation affecting the state's minimum wage. We'll have the details.
Women Who Lead on WJR with Ann Thomas and Luann Thomas-Ewald. Sponsored by the University of Michigan Health Von Voigtlander Women's Hospital.
I'm Ann Thomas, and Governor Gretchen Whitmer has signed new minimum wage and paid sick leave laws affecting thousands of Michigan workers. Wendy Block, Senior Vice President of Business Advocacy for the Michigan Chamber, joins us now to talk about these new work rules. Wendy, thank you so much for being here today.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
So tell us, what do you think? Give us the backstory on this.
Yeah, so we are extremely pleased that the Michigan legislature kind of squeaked in under the February 21 deadline to send changes to the governor's desk to the new earned sick time and minimum laws. The bills that the governor received on her desk definitely make those laws more workable for businesses and workers alike. This came about because there were two sweeping ballot proposals on these issues going back to 2018. The legislature had amended them in 2018, but the Michigan Supreme Court ruled that that action was unconstitutional. So we kind of had our backs up against the wall on these laws going into effect, and the legislature acted at the last minute to make them more workable. So again, pleased with the product here that happened in a bipartisan fashion.
So, Wendy, talk first about how this will directly affect the worker, especially a restaurant employee.
Yeah, so the impact here is very harsh and hard for many businesses across Michigan, but also for workers. So on the minimum wage changes, the Supreme Court's decision ordered into effect the full elimination of what we call the tipped minimum wage, meaning that tipped employees would not make a percentage of the full minimum wage, but would make instead 100% of the minimum wage with tips added on top. And you had many restaurant workers, thousands and thousands of restaurant workers across Michigan, making their voices heard with lawmakers and saying, we don't want this change. We like the status quo. And in fact, we have maximum earnings because of this current system. And so the legislature mostly put the current system back in place. The tip minimum wage is increasing from 38 to 50% over the next few years, but that should allow those workers to keep their hard-earned tips in the pockets and for customers at the table to not really change their tipping habits because we won't see large menu prices as a result of this change.
Now, what about the paid sick leave? How does that affect the worker?
Yeah, so this is another thing that maybe sounds good on paper, right? Who doesn't think that they should be able to have time off when they're sick, right? Mm-hmm. But it was the details here that were extremely problematic. And in fact, we had been arguing that because the language was so prescriptive about how employers had to set up these policies, that businesses that currently offered far more generous paid time off policies and the 72 hours mandated under this act would actually have seen their own policies taken backwards. So you think about employers with, for example, unlimited paid time off, like things, crazy benefits, right? The Earned Sick Time Act, as written before the legislature changed it, would have forced employers to rethink those policies and to pull back from them. Also, for other employers who offer, you know, significant vacation time benefits, it would have forced employers to put the first 72 hours into an earned sick time bank and the rest of the hours into a normal PTO bank. And employees out there were saying, but I like it combined. I like the flexibility. So the legislature restored the ability for employers to keep those generous policies in place and then also just made sure there are protections for all workers, that everyone is guaranteed to have at least 72 hours of earned sick time annually moving forward.
And what kind of feedback are you getting now from employers? Are they satisfied with this compromise?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still somewhat difficult for businesses to swallow. But what we're reminding people is that without legislative action, this still was going to happen, right? The court ordered these two sweeping new laws into effect. And the legislature just acted to make them better. They didn't repeal them, right? And I think there are some people out there who would have liked to see the legislature repeal them. But, you know, the political dynamics are such that that wasn't a realistic option for anyone. And but I think generally there's a recognition that what the legislature did here was the right thing, that they made them more workable for businesses and workers alike. And that should be considered a win all the way around.
Wendy Block is the Senior Vice President of Business Advocacy for the Michigan Chamber. You've been watching this for many, many months now. How are you feeling now that you're to this point?
We feel pretty good, right? I mean, there's a great opportunity for organizations like the Michigan Chamber to step in and help employers with their compliance obligations. We spent the weekend answering hundreds of emails, very specific emails about what now, because we've got to remember these laws went into effect immediately, right? There wasn't a lot of time for employers to catch their breath and to really unpack the details. Everybody is scrambling, and we're doing a series of compliance webinars and other things. So this is a great opportunity for organizations like ours to show our value proposition to our members. And, you know, we're just taking one day at a time to help employers understand what they need to do and help them kind of, I guess, go, right?
Sure,
go and be in compliance.
So give me a little history lesson. Take me back, because I've been watching this with great interest thinking, well, why in the world was there ever a conversation about changing this? I mean, this deal for restaurant workers especially, they liked it. Waiters and waitresses liked the way things were working. So what's the history behind this? Why was there ever any talk of change to begin with?
Right. So this kind of goes back to 2018, when two out-of-state groups were circulating petitions to get these two issues on the ballot. One issue, one on minimum wage, one on earned sick time. And, you know, when an issue is being circulated for the ballot, you see people out at, like, farmers market and farmers market collecting signatures to get that issue on the ballot. So in the instance of these two issues, they did qualify for the November 2018 ballot. But when that happens, the Constitution, our Michigan Constitution, gives the legislature a few options. It says they can adopt, or I'm sorry, it says they can do nothing, or they can reject outright. And that means it goes to the voters for a vote. They can put a competing question on the ballot, and whichever one, assuming they both pass, gets the most votes, then that one becomes law. Or it talks about how the legislature can adopt. And when the legislature adopts, the Constitution also says they can amend. And they can amend with a simple majority vote. Unlike if it goes to the people, it requires a supermajority vote, a very high threshold. So that's what the legislature did in 2018. They said, look, we think these things are very populist. People think they sound great on paper, but we know the details here aren't super practicable. So they adopted, and they subsequently amended in December of 2018. And that's what we've had that protracted litigation over, with the Supreme Court finally making its decision in July, saying that, no, legislature, you do have the right to adopt, and you do have the right to amend, but you don't have the right to adopt and amend in the same legislative session. Now, if your voters are kind of wondering about the Constitution on this, they could, you know, kind of pull it up, and they would see that the Constitution really doesn't talk about the time frame under which the legislature can amend. And so we feel like this was judicial activism at its worst. But regardless, the appeal process is done, and that's why we had these two laws going into effect on February 21, which, of course, now the legislature moved to amend again and to put those amended changes into place.
It almost sounds like two things. The devil's in the details, right? When
Correct.
You take a look at these kind of things. And also, there's unintended consequences for some
100%.
Of this stuff.
100%. Yeah. And I think it's important just knowing what has happened here and what a big mess this has been
right.
for people to realize that when you sign these petitions, when you're out at the farmer's market, you might think you're doing a good thing, right? But until you know the details and you're able to read through and get yourself educated, it might not be a great idea to just blindly sign on to one of these things, because this is how this all got started, right?
Exactly.
Your average citizen signed their name onto something because it sounded good, but the details really do matter.
Absolutely. Wendy Block, Senior Vice President of Business Advocacy for the Michigan Chamber, thank you for the real details today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Women Who Lead. I'm Ann Thomas, and on behalf of my co-host, Luann Thomas-Ewald, thank you for joining us, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.